Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. Later on the show, jazz bassist Christian McBride talks about his career and his upcoming concert for South Florida Jazz with our music contributor, Chris DeAngelis. Chef Norman Van Aken renders a word on food, and our arts calendar today features Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Now, we welcome back to the show the country's preeminent jazz TV and event producer, Larry Rosen, to discuss his long career promoting America's music and the upcoming season for Miami-Dade County's most successful jazz series, the 7th annual Jazz Roots. Larry Rosen, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thank you so much, Ed. What a pleasure.
It's such an honor to have you join us here as we were speaking earlier off mic. You have had such an exceptional career in music and particularly in jazz. Event after event after event, you came up as a musician. You met your friend Dave Grusin while at the Manhattan School of Music. You guys got together the Grusin-Rosen Productions and really started taking off with, I assume, your first artist, John Lucien. What a magnificent vocalist. And on, you were the first to digitally record a non-classical album in 1979 of Dave Grusin's Mountain Dance. I remember that recording. We played the heck out of it here in South Florida. And then in 1982, you established GRP Records, and that really took off. Did you expect such a reception for GRP back then in the early 80s?
Not really. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. You know, when you just love the music and you want to record great artists, you just go for it. You know, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. You just take a shot. It's only in retrospect you ever really understand what really took place.
Well, you became Billboard Magazine's number one contemporary jazz label for 5 consecutive years, and your artists were nominated for over 80 Grammy Awards, winning 33. That's phenomenal. Has any other jazz label ever done that? I don't think so.
I don't know. It was a remarkable time. There's no question about it. It was a time of a lot of invention was going on. You know, if we look back in jazz and the jazz history, you see at certain points certain things happen, and then they kind of follow a trend for a while, and then something new happens again, and then it follows a trend. And this was just a remarkable time period during the late 70s and 80s. It was the merging of rock and fusion music, right, and R&B and jazz and Latin, and bringing it all together. So we were right there when it was happening.
You had your feet in so many different areas of the jazz world, certainly mainstream jazz. You had, for instance, Diane Shore, and she was doing great mainstream stuff.
Right.
Patti Austin bringing a little pop tinge,
right,
R&B tinge to her wonderful jazz expressions. You were able to release recordings of Mac Rebennack, the great Dr. John,
right,
full of Louisiana sounds and Cajun gumbo and all of that. You got into smooth jazz, Spiro Gyra, the Rippingtons, David Benoit, Tom Scott. I mean, these were bona fide musicians. It just wasn't an instrumental pop thing.
Right.
It was heavily jazz soaked. So was all this just happenstance or calculated?
Well, calculated from the point of view that both Dave and I love this music, you know, and our scope is really wide. Because don't forget, at this exact same time, Dave was doing a lot of motion pictures and television shows. Mm. So he was dealing with all kinds of different music because different things are demanded by different, you know, movie scores. And of course, he was a great orchestrator. So he was writing, you know, almost symphonic kind of pieces at the same time. So from a musical spectrum, it was everything from straight ahead jazz to Latin tinge to funk to, you know, orchestral components to it, to taking a singer like Diane and recording her with the Count Basie Band, and another time recording her with Stan Getz with a rhythm section and strings. Mm-hmm. So it was all over the place.
Now, what possessed you to sell GRP Records in what to me looked like the apex of the label in, what, about 1990, you sold it to Universal Music Group, but you remained as president and CEO.
Right. Well, what happened was when, you know, Dave and I, when we first started as musicians working together, we actually started working for a singer, Andy Williams, and we traveled all around the world, played television shows and everything. And then once he started doing film scores and writing for all kinds of other artists, and I started to get involved in production, and we started with John Luciani and then Patty Austin and Lee Ritenour and then Angela Bofill and Dave Valentine. You know, we started to just be freelance producers making records. And then we met Clive Davis at Arista, and he said, why don't you guys do something together here? Why don't you, we want to give you a home here. And that's where we came up with GRP, and it was called Arista GRP. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of records there, and one record we did with a young trumpet player named Tom Brown, a song called Funkin' for Jamaica.
Took off.
Just exploded. Yeah. You know, people like Marcus Miller and all these young kind of R&B-ish kind of jazz players, and the record became sold like a million units. It was like the number one R&B record, number one jazz record. It was just huge. And this was all part of this changing structure of what was happening in music, and it was really exciting. And then technology was changing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And Dave and I were always into sound quality, and we used to tour Japan a lot, and we learned in Japan about the first compact disc players that were going to come to the United States. And we said, wow, why don't we start recording digitally and put out compact discs, where nobody else was doing it at that particular point. And we moved right into that direction. Being a small, nimble company with two creative guys, you know, running it, you could do whatever you want.
You got a lot of criticism for that. I remember at a Jazz Times convention up in New York, people were just learning about this new technology, particularly in the national jazz world.
Exactly. I mean, you know, technology, every time it comes about in some new format is ready to take place, there's all these people say, oh, you know, what do we need that for? I mean, we have LPs, that's good enough, right? Or we have cassettes, or we have whatever it is, you know. And it just, in general, people seem to resist change for whatever reason, rationale. Certainly big companies do, because they're invested in the old format, whatever it is, so they don't want to make a change. So it's usually entrepreneurs that have to kind of have the vision for what it is and then believe in it and go after it. And that's just what we did. So when we saw that this new technology, all digital technology coming in and the compact disc, we said, look, why don't we separate from Arista and just be GRP, the digital master company? And we came up with a phrase, you know, a key marketing phrase, and we started doing that. When we, you know, there were no compact disc manufacturing plants in America at that point. We used to have to import the CDs that we would make. We'd send the masters to Japan, have them pressed in Japan, and bring them back to the United States. It would take about a month between the orders.
And what expenses, too. Sure.
And by the time we got it back, they were all sold out already. So we'd have to order it again. So first time we ordered 3,000, then 5,000, then 20,000, then 50,000, then 100,000. It was crazy. I mean, how the thing, there was such a demand for it. Even the retailers, Tower Records, wasn't going to sell compact discs because it didn't fit in their bins. It was too small. So it was being sold in stereo stores that were selling CD players. They needed products, so they had GRP CD. So, I mean, it was a remarkable time, you know. And your question is, why in 1990 did we decide to sell the company? Because by the time 1990 came, every other company was replicating what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And I said to Dave one day, I said, do you know what? It's really good to understand, to project where you think you are at the top of the market. You know, everybody tries to judge when buy low, sell high, you know, and of course, nobody ever knows when low is or when high is. But we were at the point where we said, look, everybody else is copying what we're doing. We're not going to be that unique going forward. So everybody wants to buy this company. Maybe now's the time to do that. And we both agreed, and Universal and a whole bunch of others were knocking on the door. Of course,
I bet.
All the company, Motown was acquired at that point. Geffen Records was acquired at that point. A&M Records was by, even Arista was acquired. So they were coming to GRP. So we said, yes, let's take advantage of the market. And as you said, I stayed on as the CEO and president and ran the company for another 5 years. And it gave me the opportunity with Universal. They had this great catalog of Impulse records, of Decca records, of Chess records. So it was everything from these old Ramsey Lewis recordings to, you know, all the great blues artists, all the way through people like John Coltrane, certainly all the great Impulse recordings that were there, as well as Louis Armstrong and Sarah and Ella and all these recordings. And I had the opportunity to reimagine these records and put them in together and CDs and issue them. So for me, it was like, you know, I was a kid in the candy shop. I was having a great old time.
So were jazz DJs all over the country just to have the new tech form of this great American music, whether it was the blues or great mainstream jazz or contemporary jazz, a phenomenal time for you. Our guest today is Mr. Larry Rosen, and we will be continuing in conversation with him, and we'll come up to 2008 when he starts South Florida's most successful jazz series. Stay with us here on South Florida Arts Beat. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, you'll hear Chef Norman Van Aken's A Word on Food and our arts calendar with Deborah Margold, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Now, we return to the conversation with our country's premier jazz presenter, Mr. Larry Rosen, to touch on his seventh season of Jazz Roots at the Arsht Center, featuring six unique and diverse programs starting this coming November 7th through April 24th, 2015. And we're back with our guest, Mr. Larry Rosen, and we want to go back to 2008 when Larry created Jazz Roots, a Larry Rosen jazz series, a concert and educational program created for the performing arts centers all over the country. It started out, we're proud, we're honored to be able to say, at the Adrian Arsht Center right here in Miami, Florida. How did this idea develop, Larry, and how did it come into fruition that first year? I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Oh, and it wasn't. You know, it was the Arsht Center was just built at that particular point, and they were looking for programming, and there was an interim CEO at that particular point named Larry Wilka, who I knew from the Kennedy Center because he was there for many, many years, and with GRP we used to do a lot of shows in D.C. And he said, look, I understand you live here in Miami, and, you know, who would be better than you to put a jazz series on here? And I said, are you kidding? Do you think we're going to sell 2,000 seats with a jazz series in Miami? I mean, I know the history of jazz here and selling records here, and it's, you know,
it's
if
rough.
You could sell 400 tickets, you're good. Mm-hmm. Never mind 2,000 for a show. And he said, well, why don't you give it a shot? We're looking for programming. And I thought about it a lot, and I said, we have to do something really special. We have to create a brand, and that was the whole Jazz Roots concept came about. It wasn't a matter of just putting up artist names and getting a whole bunch of people to come, because it wouldn't work. So I decided we needed something organic to connect to the community. By the way, I never thought about this going to other cities. I was designing something for Miami. I was living here about 7 years at that particular point, so I had some sense of what this whole community was about. And I said, look, the Drums from Africa is the musical DNA that connect all of the Americas, not just the United States, but also the Caribbean countries and also Brazilian music. And it was really the horrible time of slavery when all these Africans were brought to the New World, and bringing the music and the heritage and the culture and certainly the rhythms and all these concepts of life force music to a new world. And that was kind of then embraced by people who were here and making their own versions of it and taking these elements and putting them together in various ways. Needless to say, in Brazil, that became the basis for samba and ultimately bossa nova, and the same thing in Cuba, Puerto Rico. It became the music that became all Latin music that we all know, ultimately into salsa, but it was rumba and certainly mambo and cha-cha-cha and so on. And in the United States, it was the basis for gospel music and blues and jazz and all the way to hip-hop, you know. So there's a gigantic history here that's really unique to America to put all these elements together. And I figured the makeup of this community is really that DNA. So if we have jazz roots and we look back at that connective tissue, it brings the whole community together. So that's what it'll be called, and that's what it's thematically going to be all based on. And we have to have an education program because we got to bring in young people and get them to understand the history here and how it all works and how it's connected. And then we also have to have thematic shows, shows around concepts and themes that fit with this overall umbrella idea of what music should all be about and how it's presented. And we have to bring in world-class, the greatest artists in the world, and be presented in a way that when audiences come in, they're going to just love what they're seeing. And ultimately, from the first show on, every show, as you know, has sold out. It's been really totally amazing.
It's remarkable.
It is remarkable.
Now, that was 2008. Your Jazz Roots series gets its start at the Arts Center here in Miami. Now it's spread throughout the country. To where?
Well, I mean, what happened was right after we did this here, all these performing arts centers speak to each other, and they're all trying to look for programming, and they're all trying to see where does jazz fit into, you know, the entire culture and the environment. And I start getting calls from, first it started in Dallas, Texas, then it was Indiana, then it was Las Vegas, then it was Atlanta, Georgia. What are you doing in Miami, and why is this working, you know? Could you come and speak to us? So I'd go and I'd speak to them in these various cities, and they had beautiful performing arts centers. And some of them tried jazz before and it didn't work. Some of them were brand new performing arts centers and they were looking for new concepts. And I just brought the same thematic idea, but put it together for each community individually, because each one is somewhat unique, you know?
Right.
And we created a Jazz Roots committee, an advisory committee in every city. So it was members of the local NPR station, the PBS station, the Boards of Education, the universities, the musicians, you know, the movers and shakers. And in each city, they became a great evangelist for what this was all about. And it kept building and building and building. So from there, it just keeps going.
What a success. Did I hear it's also in Orlando?
Orlando is opening up a brand new performing arts center, which is going to open actually in November of 2014. And I got a call from them, and they said, we heard about what's happening in Miami. Could you come here and present this concert series, Jazz Roots, here in Orlando? And I was just there just the other day with a meeting with them and talking about how we're going to launch this and how it's all going to work. And the first show will start there in November.
You are a godsend for jazz in so many different ways through the decades. Larry, we have just under 5 minutes, and you all have recently announced the 2014-2015 Jazz Roots press release. And if we can dance from event to event, I'm sure it will be delightful. November 7th, 2014, you have a great show called Georgia on My Mind. Guess who it celebrates?
Ray Charles.
Tell us about the list.
I mean, Ray Charles, look, I don't care who you are and what you like. Ray Charles is one of the most unique performers and artists in the world has ever known. I mean, you know, if there's Mozart, there's Ray Charles. Yeah, I mean, Ray Charles is just one of a kind. And he embodied so much of what we talk about jazz roots. You know, what is it all about? Where does it come from? And that real kind of core emotional connection to music. So, you know, Ray Charles is wonderful. And we put together this show to honor Ray Charles, not to try to imitate him, but to honor the music. And on the show, we have Take Six, great group that has all these gospel and jazz background, and you know they're Sons of the South, is the same way that Ray Charles was. Clint Holmes, who's an Emmy Award winner, who's appeared in concerts all around the world. Nina Freelon, one of the great jazz vocalists. Kirk Whalum, one of the great saxophone players. We have a big band, and it's led here by Shelley Berg, you know, from our own dean from the University of Miami and the Frost School of Music. and with a big band, and we have the Mass Gospel Choir from right here in Miami to do the, you know, the gospel roots that connect to all these songs like What I Say and all these great classics. And we've already presented the show a couple of times around the country, and it's been a smash hit.
I'm sure.
Very exciting show.
That's the opener, November 7th. We move on to December 19th and a presentation called Celebration, featuring your dear friend on your TV show.
That's right, Ramsey Lewis. I mean, the one and only Ramsey Lewis, the in crowd. And Ramsey is going to be here, and we're going to be celebrating the holiday season with Christmas songs and holiday songs in a funky and soulful way. And also on the show is Gregory Porter, who's one of those young new guys who was just coming on the scene. He just won a Grammy Award for the best jazz vocalist this past year, and this guy's exploding all over the country.
He's superb. Now, January 9th, the Jazz Roots series continues with an evening with Arturo Sandoval and friends. Wow.
Well, Arturo, you know, everybody knows.
Miami Homecoming.
Miami Homecoming, and I feel so connected to Arturo because when he came from Cuba to the United States and he was looking for a record deal, I signed him for GRP.
So that Bravo.
Was and when the first record we did was called Flight to Freedom.
Yeah.
And it was all about Arturo, you know, in his career and his great musicianship. We made lots and lots of records together, won Grammy Awards and so on.
That's the vision I'm talking about.
And and he's going to have a lot of guests on this show. He's bringing his homeboys here too. So we'll have Willie Chirino on the show, I mean, which is going to be an incredible show. I mean, they've done so much together. And so many other great artists are going to be on this with a big band, and there's going to be a lot of surprises that we're discussing right now that we'll tell as we get closer.
Now, for Black History Month, February 20th, you've got a great program called Soul to Soul.
And that features Diane Reeves, you know, again, one of the greatest, probably the queen of American jazz singers today. Diana is just one of a kind. And Phil Perry, one of the great jazz soul singers, is on the show with her, too. So that's our Soul to Soul show, and that celebrates Black History Month in February.
March 20th, Jazz Meets Broadway.
That's going to be a great show because, you know, we talk about Broadway. A lot of the music that came historically through Broadway were written by, you know, George and Ira Gershwin, you could go on and on, Irving Berlin. And a lot of those songs, which became actually the American Songbook, are the classics that all jazz players play on all those songs. Even Charlie Parker wrote melodies on top of those great, you know, standard songs. So we're going to be celebrating that with Michael Feinstein, which is, you know, he's one of the greats when it comes to understanding the American Songbook and Broadway. And Christine Abasol, who's one of the great stars of Broadway, will be on that show with us. And the Henry Mancini Institute Orchestra, the whole 80-piece orchestra, and it's going to be just an incredible night of Broadway and jazz.
You wrap up Jazz Roots April 24th, 2015, with Jazz Appreciation Month and jazz legends, two of my favorites.
Al Jarreau and David Sanborn. Now, come on. I mean, it's as good as it gets.
So, an exquisite new season for Jazz Roots, a Larry Rosen jazz series taking place, of course, at the Adrian Arsht Center right here in Miami. If you're traveling throughout the country, perhaps you want to stop in Carmel, Indiana, Dallas, Texas, Orlando, and see their versions of Jazz Roots. And Larry Rosen, it's always an honor to have you join us. Our time is always, unfortunately, too brief, but thank you so much for joining us again on South Florida Arts Beat. All the success to you in the world, sir.
Well, thank you, Ed. It's a pleasure to be here, and I feel like I'm home right here. Thank you for everything.
And once again, that's the 7th annual Jazz Roots, a Larry Rosen jazz series presented by Wells Fargo at the Arsht Center starting this November 7th through April 24th, 2015. For more information, go to arshtcenter.org or call 305-949-6722. You can also go to larryrosen.com or jazzroots.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment.